Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Seth Diamond, Commissioner of the New York City Department of Homeless Services. So, Seth, for a number of years, the city has administrated a rental subsidy program, Advantage New York, that sought to help clients transition from temporary emergency shelter to self-sufficiency. Would you tell us what's going on now that the state has eliminated some funding for it?
Advantage is a rental subsidy program that pays a portion of the rent for people who are in the shelter system, who leave shelter and maintain themselves in the community. And Advantage, we thought, was a very effective program because it linked employment with rental subsidy. It said to people in the shelter system, if you go to work, if you take the chance of entering the work world, we will support you by giving you a rental subsidy and paying your rent for you to leave shelter, and we'll pay it for 2 years to give you time to stabilize in the community and increase your income. After that, hopefully you've raised it to a point where you can afford it on your own, but we'll get you started and maintain yourself, help you maintain yourself for a while. Unfortunately, even though it was very effective, there were some people who thought that it wasn't long enough or that there were other issues with it. And the state, largely for budget reasons, last year, almost exactly a year ago, eliminated funding for the program. We think that that was the wrong decision, and we fought very hard during the budget process to maintain it. But it ended it. And unfortunately, even though we thought it was a very good program, it was also a very expensive program. And so the city is not in a position that it could maintain the funding for the program on its own. Most of the funding for the program came from the state or from the federal government. And when the state ended its share of the funding, it took also the federal funding with it. And so the city was left in the position of not being able to pay the full cost. It was not fair for city taxpayers to have to bear the full cost of the program. There were, at the end of the program, about 15,000 households that were enrolled, but over the life of the program, about 25,000 had moved through, and the overwhelming number of them had remained in the community and not returned to shelter, which is ultimately the test of the program. If a program is just cycling people through and they come back to shelter, obviously it's not effective. But this program, the overwhelming number had maintained themselves in the community, and we thought it was very effective. There are now about 8,000, a little less than 8,000 households that are still in the program. We're continuing to work with those to find alternatives.
Seth, given your background and where you came from before, how critical is employment assistance to ensuring families who leave the shelter system find greater stability in the communities to which they are moved? Along with income, what other staples does employment bring to a family that can mitigate them being at risk?
I think it's really the most critical support, and it's in a range of social services. I think one of the things that there's consensus around now that's really developed in the last decade is how important working is to a family's stability. It used to be that work was thought as either not at all part of the mix or as an afterthought in a range of services, whether it's child welfare or public assistance or homelessness. And now, I think if you talk to most leaders in the field, they will tell you that having a family with a working adult who provides a good example, it's not even the income, although obviously the income is critical, but the example, the stability, the attachment to other working people into the community that it creates really helps improve family life tremendously.
So I'd like to switch gears a little bit. For over three decades, the city transformed its shelter system for single adults into one that is recognized as the most comprehensive and sophisticated in the nation. First, what are two notable shifts you've observed in this population? And secondly, how does implementing a single eligibility process help you properly respond to these changes?
Well, I think the biggest change, which is related to the eligibility process, is the change in the people who are coming into the shelter system. There was, for many years, a thought, and it was partly matched by the reality, that people were coming directly from the street into the shelter system, and that the overwhelming number of people in the single adult system were people who had no employment prospects, significant mental illness or substance abuse issues, and were there because they had been living just on the streets and had no alternatives. What we've seen, particularly in the last few years, the last 5 years, is a real shift in the people coming in. Many more people who are either working or have work histories As I said earlier, the overwhelming number coming in who have been living with somebody else. 5 years ago, nearly a third of the people coming into the single adult system were coming from the street directly. Now that number is less than 15%. Mm-hmm. Many fewer people coming directly from the street, many more people coming from house situations. And again, that creates opportunities, I think, to get at the issue. There are still significant numbers of people who are coming who have mental illness and substance abuse, and those we have to deal with in a particular way. You can't have only one policy. You have to recognize that you have different components of the population. But particularly for the ones who have employment prospects or with a connection to employment could have income and be able to afford an apartment, there we have a real opportunity to help them very quickly get back into the job market, find a place to live, and hopefully move out of the shelter system quickly.
So there's some critics to this approach. And how do you respond to these critics?
Well, I think, again, some of it is a fear. Some of it, I think, is not fully understanding the nature of the population. I think a lot of people are very skeptical that people would come into the shelter system if they had another option. And I understand that. And I think even some of the people who come into the shelter system don't realize that there are other options. There's also a fear that we will make decisions that will cause people to go to live on the street if we deny people shelter. While I understand that, and that is obviously a concern, I think we can address that, number one, because nobody wants people sleeping on the city streets. We've done too much work over the past years to reduce the number of people on the streets, and nobody wants people to be back on the city streets. So we will do everything we can to prevent that. Secondly, we've administered an eligibility system for families for 15 years, and that has gone remarkably well with little degree of controversy. And so we have a lot of lessons that we've learned from that that we would apply.
I mean, it's critically important to understand the population you're working for. Would you tell us more about the annual homeless outreach population estimate, or HOPE, survey? I understand New York was a trailblazer in this.
Yeah, that's one of the tools that we use to help evaluate how many people are sleeping on the city streets. And every year we do a count. It's at the end of January, the beginning of February, in that time period. It's actually required, the federal government requires cities who access a certain type of funding to do a count at least every 2 years. New York City does it every year. And we do a very rigorous methodology. As you say, we've been a leader in the way we do it. It ends up being really a community event in New York City. It's so you don't think of New York City, a city of 8.1 million people, as having a community event, but it involves 3,000 New Yorkers in neighborhoods throughout the city. We take over schools and other kinds of facilities in dozens of sites throughout New York, and it goes late at night. It doesn't start till 10 or 11 o'clock. People fan out for hours throughout the evening in groups. It involves people from every walk of life. I did it this year with college students. I did it with some West Point cadets. You get a lot of city employees who are familiar and want to help. But really, most people who do it are people who are in New York and just want to try and find a way to help. And this is an expression of that desire. What we do is we go out around the city and to corners of the city. We cover everywhere we can the public spaces, and we count the number of people who are there. And then we use that tally to, again, assess how we're doing, one of the tools to assess how we're doing on serving those who are on the street.
So how do the findings or some of the tallies that you get actually inform service delivery?
Well, first, the basic number is very important because, again, it's one measure. It's not the only measure, but it is one measure of our services and how we're doing. There's also subcategories. So each borough has a number, and the subways have a number too. So we're able to see trends within the overall number. Are certain boroughs going up? Are certain neighborhoods going up? Are the subways going up or down? And that can be very important in terms of where you deploy the resources. If you have a number that's going up or down, but it's citywide, but you don't know where to plug in the resources to address it, it can be, you know, more difficult to get to the problem. So it allows us to better target the resources and to get a better understanding about where we have problems.
So I'd like to focus on two populations that use New York City shelters. You touched on it a little bit, the veteran, but also what about the senior population? What are you doing, if I could combine these two questions? Maybe you could highlight some of the efforts you've been pursuing with the VA to combat this veterans homelessness issue, and then also talk a little bit about what you're doing for seniors.
Well, one of the challenges in a city as large as New York City, we have tremendous resources because of our size, but one of the difficulties that comes is how do you have a system that serves a large number of people yet provides the services that are specialized to the target populations? Because veterans has been a particular focus. The mayor has a real commitment to making sure that we serve our veterans well, that they've served the country, that we as a city should make sure we honor their service by providing good services in return. And we've been fortunate because nationally there is interest, greater interest in serving veterans than probably any other single aspect of the homeless population. And so there's been more funding available for veterans than there has been. So we've tried to develop a specialized process for them, which involves separate shelters for veterans. When they come in, they have a separate intake process that they go through that tries to identify their particular veteran background and what services they might be eligible for. It works with the VA, the Veterans Administration, very closely to make sure that we have the whole history together. And then really tries to move them as quickly as possible through the system because veterans particularly are available for specialized housing assistance and other kinds of support. Seniors are another more recently emerging group. We have had a bit of a growth in the number of seniors, and we have a specialized shelter for seniors also. Certainly the broad message of working and employment is probably less applicable to seniors, although some seniors can go to work. A lot of them are beyond their work years. And so we need to have a specialized approach, and the shelter system should be a little more welcoming, a little more supportive for seniors. They have more health care needs. Their social services needs might be different. Their community attachment, there might be more opportunities with children maybe than to reconnect. And so that might be an opportunity that you'd want to focus on. But there are other kinds of needs that might be particular to the senior population. And there's also some senior-specific housing that's available. So there's opportunities to move seniors from shelter into housing more directly.
I'd like to talk about how DHS gets the needs of services and products that it needs into the system. I mean, you mentioned earlier that you're reliant on a lot of nonprofits. I had the pleasure of interviewing Deputy Mayor Gibbs, and she talked a little bit about how the city is engaging nonprofits more innovatively to work with the city in a seamless manner. What are you folks doing in the area of agile acquisition? How are you making the acquisition or procurement of services, working with the city, more agile and more flexible for those who have an ability to help the city out?
Yeah, that's been a major priority of the mayor and of Deputy Mayor Gibbs. You know, New York City, it's people think of the social services that the city provides social services. And of course, we do fund the services. But in most of the social services areas in New York, the actual services are provided by not-for-profit organizations. So whether it's child welfare or employment or homeless services, New York City employees often do the eligibility and the intake and sort of set the rules. But the day-to-day services, the contact with people who need the services, are really with not-for-profit organizations. So we really rely and partner very closely with not-for-profit organizations. They have, unfortunately, the same way the city has faced financial difficulties, they have faced some of the same kind of difficulties, both because the funding that they have from a range of government agencies has been reduced. Their own fundraising has sometimes been at risk. And so they have, in some senses, suffered along with the rest of the city for reduced budgets. But the city has taken a number of steps to try and make it easier both for them to access government and to cheaper for them to operate. So some of the initiatives focus on using the power of the not-for-profits, for example, for purchasing power. The city's doing an initiative now with trying to do some of the purchasing, band together the not-for-profit agencies so that they could do purchasing as a unit, as an entity, as a big entity, as opposed to individual ones. Also, there's tremendous paperwork in dealing with the government. Anyone who's applied for any kind of government benefit or files taxes or does anything knows that there's lots of paperwork that comes with it. And that's certainly true for the not-for-profit agencies. And it's particularly ones who have contracts with multiple agencies have to file the same paperwork over and over again. So one of the things the city is doing is developing a document vault so that when you file paperwork with one agency, it's stored and available to a range of agencies. And it'll cut down on some of the timing, make it easier to apply, and hopefully make it more efficient and cost-effective for not-for-profits.
Are you using in your your agency, the power of analytics to make data-driven decisions when you think about resource allocations?
Sure. That's one of the things that the mayor probably maybe the thing that he'd be most well known for when he leaves office is the real cementing of the city's connection to data to manage government. We have probably more indicators than any other city agency in terms of our performance and in looking at different aspects. And we are constantly using metrics to look at what we're doing and how we're doing and how effective the service is and how we look every day and every week at a range of indicators and try and make adjustments. One of the things that you learn is that just like we try and prevent homelessness by intervening early, you can often prevent poor performance by intervening early. And so even a small trend of a couple weeks, it can be cause for concern, and you really want to get behind that. The city is trying to move beyond just sort of using it within one agency, but to look at the broad framework of all the agencies, and particularly in the social services area, that collect data, and how can we use that information better so that maybe when we look at how to prevent homelessness, we only look at indicators affecting people who come into our system. But maybe if we looked at people who were released from jail or people who accessed the child welfare system or people who had food stamps or families who were in the school system where the children were failing, maybe those would be good indicators of people who are going to access the homeless system. So that if you pooled all the data and you could look at patterns across a range of agencies, maybe you would see trends that you'd better be able to understand who's going to access services. Or maybe on the opposite end, when we send families back into the community, the ones who come back to shelter, maybe there are certain characteristics of how they behave in the community in terms of their connection with governmental benefits or services that could give us information about who are really at risk of returning to shelter. So it's a big project that the city is just really in the infancy of, but it really has the potential to be very smart and to put us in a position to really use all this information that is just now at our fingertips but is not sort of molded in a way to really effectively influence our services.
What does the future hold for the New York City Department of Homeless Services? We will ask its commissioner, Seth Diamond, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.